From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And 2 weeks from tomorrow, the final ballots will be cast in this year's midterm elections. Here in Illinois, early voting has been underway since September 29th. While we've watched debates or heard formal interviews with many candidates, one incumbent has been noticeably absent from that sort of coverage. Not that that will in any way diminish her high likelihood of being reelected. We're talking about the 15th Congressional District Republican Congresswoman Mary Miller. As you might recall, former President Donald Trump backed Miller in the primary election, notably at a rally in Quincy back in June.
There's only one true America First Republican in the race for the 15th district, and that's an incredible woman, somebody I've gotten to know very well. She's been with me from day one. No bad back statements.
The next week, Miller defeated fellow Republican and former Trump reelection chair Rodney Davis in the primary. The farmer and member of the House Freedom Caucus is widely expected to win re-election in this district that was shaped to suit Republican candidates. Her Democratic opponent, Paul Lang, has little name recognition or campaign money with which to compete. Despite numerous criticisms of the Biden administration on her YouTube and Twitter pages, Miller has given few interviews and has not debated. Joining us to talk more about covering that sort of campaign are three reporters who've been doing exactly that. Harrison Mulkin is politics and democracy reporter for our home station, Illinois Public Media. Harrison, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Brendan Moore covers government and politics for Lee Enterprises Newspapers, which owns several newspapers in and around the 15th Congressional District. Brendan, welcome back to you.
Always happy to be on, Brian.
And finally, Mark Maxwell is political editor of KSDK-TV in St. Louis. Wait, St. Louis? Yeah, well, the 15th District's western border is the Illinois-Missouri state line, and Illinois politics is half of Mark's beat. He was also a longtime Illinois state politics reporter in Springfield. Mark, welcome to you.
Hi, Brian. Great to be with you.
And we want to make it clear, we've talked to many members of the Illinois congressional delegation, Democratic and Republican, and would-be members. We have invited Mary Miller on the 21st show in the past. She has never accepted our invitation. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number to call, 800-222-9455. So a lot of ground to cover, a lot of people to cover it with, and not too much time. So I'll begin. Harrison, quick recap. What happened in the Republican primary in the 15th in June?
Yeah, so Representative Rodney Davis decided to run in the 15th, faced off against Mary Miller, also an incumbent congressperson. And it was really just the Trump factor. I think Trump was able to push the needle in Mary Miller's favor. And I think ideologically, the people that are in the 15th district agree more with Miller's politics, and I think there's more visibility in her favor. I remember talking to somebody at the Trump-Miller rally in June, and they just didn't really know who Rodney Davis was. So I think you have ideology, and you also have visibility, and that was it for me, I think.
Incumbent for 10 years, Rodney Davis. Mark, do you see it that way? Do you think President Trump's endorsement was decisive in the primary?
When you look at the map and the voter turnout in the primary, there is certainly evidence that supports that theory. Especially when you look at Adams County, the most populated county in the new 15th, which sweeps up much of the rural and sparsely populated parts of Illinois. It was in Adams County where Mary Miller dominated Rodney Davis. That was new turf for both of them. They were both in Congress, but neither of them represented that region before. The new map put them in that area. So in Rodney Davis's home turf in Taylorville and Christian County, he got more votes naturally. In Mary Miller's backyard, just near where her district had been, she outperformed him. But in both of those parts of the state, it was a lot closer. It was in Quincy and in surrounding Adams County where the Trump factor really did drive up turnout and gave her the biggest margin of victory in the most heavily populated area of that district. So I do think it looks like that's one of a very few races in 2022 where Donald Trump played an outsized role.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Adams County and Quincy, because that segues into a next part of our conversation. Miller, as I mentioned, has repeatedly declined debate requests, or and I guess in a lot of cases not even responded to them, as well as interviews with local and national news outlets. One exception, though, is an interview that Miller gave to Muddy River News, which is in Quincy. Here's an exchange she had with editor Bob Gow.
you know, we just need to face the fact. Number one, elections have consequences. We need to hold our elected officials accountable to actually represent us and do what they claim that they were going to do. And we need to recognize the fact that Democrat policies stifle production, and even their tax and spend policies make it, it's a hardship on families and small businesses.
I got to say, it's striking to me how little I've heard her voice. That's like, I was like, oh, that's what she sounds like. Brendan Moore, I wonder what your interactions with Congresswoman Miller and her campaign have been like.
Honestly, Brian, pretty non-existent. When I and other political reporters would show up at events, and granted, they would not typically release her schedule. We would have to find out through other means where she would be in and around the district. She often wouldn't even acknowledge that we were there. You know, she would not even say hello, and certainly wouldn't take questions. And throughout the primary, that was a consistent theme. I know I reached out, and several other news organizations, reporters reached out to try and interview her ahead of that primary, even just to, for an election preview story. And I don't think she responded to anybody. And obviously we saw with the results on June 28th that it quite frankly didn't matter, that she still beat Congressman Davis by 16 points. The Trump factor was significant in that. And it's been a theme, especially in some of these far right, ruby red Republican districts that especially, constituencies that don't really you have a built-in distrust of the media, that these candidates are not penalized for not talking to us. To answer your question, very, very minimal contact.
Very minimal, yeah. You mentioned public schedules or getting notice. For people who may not know, most reporters who cover government and politics get a slew of emails every evening. They used to come late afternoon. Now they come late evening, that say public schedule for the governor, for the mayor of so-and-so, for candidate X. And that's not something we get. Harrison, what about you? What have your interactions with Congresswoman Miller consisted of this cycle?
Just to relate directly to what you're saying, I remember calling, I think it was Miller's Effingham satellite office, and saying, I'm a reporter. What events is she doing coming up? I'd like to go and interview her, say hi. And they said, that's private information. And I thought that was weird, and that really struck me. But I've reached out. I will say I've been persistent throughout this process, before the primary, after the primary. I've sent so many emails, and I've basically received one response that said, we'll get back to you for a statement. And there was never a statement. And it was about a really simple issue, just like emergency loans for farmers. So something that is really good public information, which we did do a story about it anyway. But I've tried and I've failed. I've been able to get in touch with her husband, State Rep Chris Miller, and he's spoken to me extensively, but she's been really difficult to pin down. And I was at a Darren Bailey rally just this past weekend in Champaign, and I spoke to a couple, and I told them that she's been really difficult to speak to. And they were really surprised. They said, she should speak to you. So I think some of her supporters do want answers.
Mark, what about you? You've had some tough stories on the Miller campaign, and at least one of the people she hired. I don't know if you want to talk about that or your other interactions.
Sure. You're referring to one of the family's political friends and allies and aides. I believe he may have been a volunteer working closely with the campaign. He had a prior a criminal offense for grooming children, or it was a pretty ugly story, but it struck a nerve because her campaign has been so loud about protecting children and working with children. And this was something that they didn't really want to engage with. If you're looking for reasons to understand why Mary Miller is so skeptical or reluctant to engage the press, look, she is suspicious of media. She is short on specifics, which would make an interview hard. She's long on suspicion. And for a long time, some of her initial coverage in the press has been when she stepped to the mic on her second or third day on the job, right before January 6th, and quoted Adolf Hitler. I mean, that was a news story that came with a lot of backlash. And she felt like, well, I'm not going to get much of a favorable interview with the media. It also plays into the President Trump narrative of just rejecting journalism as a whole and showing yourself to the public more as who you are, who you align with, and less about explaining what you would do with power if the voters gave it to you. So she came into power in the minority in Congress as the country was in the middle of rejecting Donald Trump. So she sees it as part of her role to defend him and his brand with a bit of defiance. She brought Marjorie Taylor Greene to her district in a big fundraiser during the primary. And so, look, no one's going to really cry for us, the reporters, when people in power don't give us interviews. There are still ways we can learn about who she is, what she stands for, and what she would do. Yeah, of course, we'd all love to have, you know, a little bit of a insight into the thinking of our members of Congress, but we're not always going to get it. And so we have to find other ways to talk to her supporters, her allies, her rivals, and through those prisms, those lenses, we can learn a little bit more about what she's doing with the power that people gave her.
100%. You know, and I used to work with a guy who had this saying, sometimes this is in a newspaper setting, but sometimes it's better when they don't call you back because then you can just write the story that, you know, is true without, you know, having to complicate it with their spin. I'm paraphrasing that. But Mark, there is a cost, right? And I'm not going to both sides this. There's definitely President Trump has made his brand sort of attacking the media, and a lot of Republicans have taken up that. But you are seeing this bleed into the across the political spectrum a little bit, right? In Arizona, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate is refusing to debate the Republican nominee there, who's a former TV anchor. Do you see a bigger cost to democracy when candidates shut out media that holds itself to standards of fairness and balance and you know, accuracy, things like that?
That might be one of the most underreported trends of the 2022 election cycle, is the trend away from debate. We're seeing it here in Missouri in a Senate race. A contest to become part of the world's most deliberative body, where all you'll do is debate and fundraise, but there's no debate. And that's happening, as you mentioned, in Arizona. It's happening in a number of House races. It's happening in Mary Miller's case. So yeah, I think that we are seeing, and look, it speaks to the chasm that's growing between the two polarized sides. Part of understanding Mary Miller's rise to power is also knowing a lot about her Christian faith and her rural sort of way of life, the culture there. So she's suspicious naturally of government, of media, of higher education. And so she has sort of used this platform to prop up those other people and to connect with those other people who also for the last, you know, decade or 20 years or so have felt farther and farther marginalized from mainstream. So much so that now she speaks with a bullhorn and connects with people across the district. She can do it on Twitter. She can do it on Fox News and connect with those folks who are the true believers, if you will, and doesn't have to go through mainstream channels because she has the internet and Breitbart.com or other far right media outlets to connect with those voters.
Well, we're running short on time, but Brennan Moore, talk to us a little bit about Paul Lang, the Democrat who is challenging Mary Miller.
So Paul Lang is from Quincy. He is, we don't know a whole lot about, there has been a lot of coverage of him. This is a ruby red Republican district. As you said at the outset, Mary Miller is expected to media interviews has indicated that he wishes to give the voters a choice. So it's not just a rubber stamp of Mary Miller. Just a quick scan of his website. He seems to stand for very standard Democratic positions. He is a bit to the left. He supports a single payer healthcare system, for instance. It's probably a little bit a bit too liberal for some in that district, but he is again not very well funded, certainly not a household name. But we'll give voters who maybe are not satisfied with Congresswoman Miller an option to voice that dissatisfaction on Election Day.
Yeah, even in these ruby red districts, right, you still have tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people who would prefer the other candidate. And same thing when we have districts going the other way. Harrison, just about a minute and a half left. You've spoken to Paul Lang. What is, and other candidates who are sort of long shots in these districts that go the other way, what does he say is motivating his run?
Yeah, I mean, he sees it as like this existential battle or even like a sports David and Goliath underdog race. I think he said he was a Baltimore Colts fan, or which is now the Indianapolis Colts, of course. But he really rubs me as like an FDR old school Democrat. And he says, you know, if no one else ran, then it would be a shame. I need to do what no one else would do. And he feels like he's standing up for the people in the Quincy area that are Democratic and also across the district and being their lone voice of support. And he might not have much of a chance, but I think he sees this as something bigger and something really important to do and be a part of, similar to Thomas Lynch, who's a Republican in the 2nd District running against incumbent Robin Kelly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Harrison Malkin with Illinois Public Media, Mark Maxwell with KSDK-TV, and Brendan Moore of Lee Enterprises Newspapers. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
And I'm sure all of us will continue trying to speak with Congresswoman Miller herself and certainly reporting stories about her by talking to people around her if she is not willing to sit down with reporters, again, from outlets that hold themselves to, attempting to hold themselves to traditional standards of balance and accuracy and so forth. All right, more to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.